Good morning. Today's Daf and Shabbos Kuf Chav Beis. Finishing up this morning the 16th parak of Maseches Shabbos. We are going to be discussing the issue of Amir La'akum. We discussed it briefly yesterday. Today's Daf with the Mishnah and the last sugya of the parak. We're going to be discussing it in some greater detail. We are on the very bottom of Kuf Chav Aleph Amud Beis. We're starting at the two lines towards the bottom. We discussed yesterday houses on fire and what one's supposed to do when the house is on fire vis-a-vis what happens when a guy sees the house is on fire. A guy wants to put it out. Are you to give him instructions to put it out? The answer is no. Are you to give him instructions not to put it out? Once again, the answer is no. You just simply allow him to do so. He's doing so for himself. He realizes that there will be gain for him to do so. There'll be some sort of financial gain for him to do so. And obviously, he's not a Shomer Shabbos, so he puts it out. The Gemara had a number of discussions yesterday, but as we turn to yesterday's Amud Beis, we talked in brief about killing the Mazikin. That's because the Mishnah on yesterday's Daf, the second Mishnah in yesterday's Daf, spoke about inverting a bowl. Inverting a bowl over a fire so that the fire doesn't spread, inverting a bowl over the Tsoa, so that the child doesn't play with the Tsoa, and inverting a bowl over a dangerous animal. And so the Gemara got onto a discussion about whether or not there's any permissibility to go ahead and to kill an animal that poses a threat or a danger. Snakes, scorpions, bees, wasps. So on Shabbos, you're allowed to kill them in order to avoid being stung. So the Gemara discussed that yesterday. The Gemara now, as we turn to the bottom of yesterday's Daf, Kuf Chafal from the base, 2 lines from the bottom. So we're going to go off on three disparate topics, not really related to our issue, but one of the Amorim we quoted yesterday was Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. So the Gemara now is going to be quoting three successive statements of Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, and we start off with number one. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Pamuto Shabbos, Rabbi Mutal Talkam Shabbos. So you have this candelabra. It's made up of sections. So one is allowed to move it on Shabbos, meaning it's not going to be muksa. Amle Rabbi Zera b'nitalim b'yado achas b'shtei yadayim. Rabbi Zera had a follow-up question. Are we talking about one that's covered with one hand or one covered with two hands? Is it large or is it small? So Amar Lei, so as we turn to the top of Kuchav Beis Amad Aleph, so the response is, ka'osan shal beis avicha, like the ones of your father. And the Gemara over here does not give a clear report whether it's large or small, but the assumption, of course, is that the ones of your father, Rashi writes over here, are small. Getanos hayu, avagadol sadam koven la'makom. A large candelabra, so it is set in one place. It is not meant to be moved on Shabbos. We could call it muksa machmas chisar and kiss. We're going to be talking more about that as we open up the 17th parak of Maseches Shabbos, where we're going to be talking about muksa. Anyway, the large ones are muksa, the small ones are not muksa. A second statement, Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Kodesh Shel Beis Rebbe, Mutal Taltum Shabbos. So you have these wagons. So these wagons are not muksa. So once again, the Gemara wants a clarification. Amar Lei Rabbi Zer, B'nei Talam Ba'adam Echad, B'nei Adam, ones that are carried by one person or by two people. Again, a small wagon or a large wagon. Amar Lei Ka'ostum Shel Beis Avicha, like the ones of your father. And again, the assumption over here is that we're talking about small wagons. Small wagons that carry people, so they're not going to be muksa. And finally, the last issue, totally not related to our issue, but again, same Baal Memra, so that's why the Gemara brings it up over here. And that is Rabbi Chanina gave an allowance for Beis Rebbe, the house of Rebbe, to drink wine. Wine was transported by non-Jews. And it had a seal, but only had one seal on it. We go back to the days of Avodah Zarah, Masecha Avodah Zarah, where we discussed over there the allowance to drink wine that was transported by a non-Jew. Now, the concern is that if a non-Jew were to actually touch the wine itself, so then the wine could be, at worst, Yain Nesach, but at best, it's Tam Yainam, either one of them being Usser. And so, how do we know that the wine was not tampered with, so the wine has a seal on it? The Gemara of Avodah Zarah says that in order to make sure that it's really tamper-proof, so it needs two seals on it. So over here, Rabbi Chanina is saying that for Beis Rebbe, they don't need two seals, they only need one seal. Now that obviously is a heter. That's a, that is a very serious dispensation. So v'lo yadanam, and the Gemara says imishum desavala karebi aliyazre imishum a masa debe nisia. Why was such a special allowance given that the wine could be drunk even though it only had one seal on it? So there are two possibilities, and the Gemara says I don't know which one's correct. One possibility is that simply we're subscribing to the Shita Rabbi Eliezer, meaning there is a Das Yachid in the Gemara Avodah Zarah that one seal is sufficient, and it could very well be that the heter that's given is just simply based on the fact that we are siding with Rabbi Eliezer. The other possibility is that no, in general you need two seals. This is a heter given specific to the Beis Nasi. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi obviously is part of the Beis Nasi. He is the leader of the Jewish community. Rashi writes over here, Sharei Hanachri HaMivio, the non-Jew is transporting the wine, Yarei Min HaNasi. So he has, understandably, a fear of the house of the Nasi. Shei Shalat Al Pi HaMalchus. He was the leader. He was back then, not official or formal king, but basically the closest thing we had to Malchus at that point in time. And so it could very well be that because of that extra yira that came with being Beis Rabbi, so therefore one seal would be sufficient and there would be an assurance that the wine would not be tampered with. So the Gemara says, unclear exactly what the heter is based on. Okay, concluding now yesterday's Gemara, we are opening up now the Mishnah on Kuf Chav Beis Amud Aleph. And here we go with a discussion of Amir Lenachri. Nachri Shehidlik Esaner Mishamish La'oro Yisrael V'im Bishvil Yisrael Aser. So let's say a non-Jew lights a fire on Shabbos. So a Jew is allowed to benefit from the fire. However, if the non-Jew lit it for a Jew, so then it was going to be Aser, then it's going to be forbidden. So there are going to be a total of three examples in our Mishnah. Example number one is that a non-Jew doing something for himself on Shabbos, so there's not going to be an Isser Hana, but once he's doing it for you, so then it's going to be Asr for Hana. You cannot get benefit from it. A couple of points over here before we go on to the other two examples of the Mishnah. Number one, the Mishnah over here certainly is teaching us 2 points when it comes to Amir Lenachri. Yesterday we were talking about the instruction that you give to the Nachri. Meaning, in yesterday's daf we were focusing on what can you ask the Nachri to do. So, can you ask him to put out the fire? Can you ask him not to put out the fire? So, the focus yesterday was on the Amira. Over here, in our Mishnah, what we're clearly articulating is that there's an issue of Hana'a. That if the non-Jew did something for you, and you didn't even ask him to do it, but it's clear that he did it for you, so then the benefits of that action is asr b'hana'ah. And that's even if you didn't ask him to do so, but it's clear from the context that he did it specifically for you, so then you cannot get benefit from it. It would be asr b'hana'ah. Now, Tosfos over here makes a number of points. Let's start off with the first point of Tosfos. It's asr l'hana'ah for which Jew? The one who it was done for or for all Jews? So take a look at Tosfos over here. Third Tosfos on the Amud. This third Tosfos really is critical in terms of the halachas of Amir Lenachri. So Tosfos opens up by saying, Niradasa l'chol Yisrael, that it would be us for every single Jew. Once a non-Jew does a malacha on behalf of any Jew, so then the benefits are going to be prohibited to all Jews. And Tosfos notes that there are other areas in halacha where there is an Isra Hanah only for the beneficiary and for nobody else. But Tosfos says, but that's not true when it comes to the Isser of Amir Lenachri. Amir Lenachri, which we discussed yesterday, is an Isser de Rabbanan. You cannot ask a non-Jew to do something for you. You cannot get benefit from the actions of the non-Jew. That was a Chilul Shabbos. So we learned this yesterday. So Rashi just simply says it's an Isser de Rabbanan. Notwithstanding, Tosfos over here writes that the Isser de Rabbanan is L'chol Yisrael. So no Jew can get benefit from it, even if you are not the one who the non-Jew had in mind when benefiting. Nevertheless, it's still going to be asr b'hana'ah. So that's the first point of Tosfos, a really critical point of Tosfos. Now, there are other cases where only the beneficiary is going to be asr. Tosfos goes through them, but I'm going to skip now a little bit through this Tosfos and go to the second half of Tosfos, and that is, let's understand the distinction to be made between today's daf and yesterday's daf. Now, in yesterday's daf, what happened? The house was on fire, and the non-Jew is about to put it out, and you can allow him to do so. So let's think this through. Obviously, you're going to be benefiting from the non-Jew putting out the fire. So what's the difference between yesterday's daf and today's daf? In yesterday's daf, you certainly are benefiting from the non-Jew putting out the fire. In today's daf, we're learning that if the non-Jew lit a fire, you cannot benefit from that fire. You cannot benefit from the light of that fire. So why is today there an Isser and Hana, and yesterday there is no Isser or Hana? So v'lo dami lahad amr la'el nachrish av alachavas en omrim lo kabe v'atechbeh v'achar aser kishosu b'shvi Yisrael. So Tosfos articulates the question, how do I understand the difference between yesterday's daf and today's daf? When we say that the non-Jew is doing it strictly on his own behalf, like we said in yesterday's daf, that's only in terms of extinguishing. Because there the Jew is not receiving direct benefit from the action. Meaning, yes, it's true, your house now is saved from the fire, but that's not a positive benefit. That's just simply now there is no longer a fire. That is a hana based on the absence of something. But over here where you're receiving a positive benefit, meaning he lit a fire, and now it's providing light, illumination, it may provide heat. So you're receiving positive benefit from it. So under those circumstances, lo amrin adaita danaf shekavin, we don't give the argument that the guy is doing it strictly on his own behalf. Hova anachri miskavin la'anoso, because anachri has intent to benefit you. So kach perish Rabbeinu Shimshon HaZaken. So this is Tosfos quoting the Rash, one of the Balei HaTosfos. So and understanding the distinction between positive benefit and just simply the absence of something, which is yesterday's daf. In terms of halacha lamaisa, just give a simple and basic example in terms of understanding this distinction that Tosfos is making, and that is that let's say you have a light on and it's difficult for you to go to sleep. So under those circumstances, if a non-Jew, now there are two issues, and this is important halacha, and I don't want to get too involved in it because we do have a daf to go through. But if there are two issues when it comes to Amir Lanachri, there's the ask, meaning that you're not allowed to directly ask the non-Jew to do something for you, and then there's the benefit after the non-Jew did something for you. So right now, just moving beyond the ask, because you can't directly ask him to do something for you, but let's say there's a light on and the non-Jew were to turn it off, so there, that's Kuf Chaf Aleph. That Shabbos Kuf Chaf Aleph. That's just simply now the absence of a benefit. And in other words, something that was bothering you, and he removed it. So that's something where you can go ahead and you can enjoy and you can benefit from that because you're not directly benefiting. You're benefiting from the absence of the light. On the other hand, if let's say it's dark in the room and the non-Jew turned the light on, so then you have to walk out of the room. You can't benefit from the light. That's today's daf. That's Kuf Chaf Beis. So if a guy were to turn the light off, that's Shabbos daf Kuf Chaf Aleph. If the guy were to turn the light on, that's Shabbos daf Kuf Chaf Beis. Okay, that's a very basic, point. That's basic halacha in terms of Amir Lanachri. And then, of course, I just go back for a moment, and then there's a question of asking. You're not allowed to ask a guy to do either. You're not allowed to ask him to turn the light on. You're not allowed to ask him to turn the light off. Here's where we get to the hinting part, which everybody knows, but now we understand it within the context of the Gemara. You can't ask him for either. So as far, and we saw that in yesterday's daf as well. So as far as turning the light off, you could just simply explain. The light is on in my room. I am a Shomer Shabbos. I'm not allowed to turn the light off. And if he figures it out on his own, good. He figures it out on his own. And that's Kuf Chaf Aleph. On the other hand, you want the light on. Even hinting is not going to work because you're not allowed to get benefit once the light is on. Okay. Ad kan, that just is some very basic discussions of Amir Lanachri in the context of Tosfos and understanding the difference between yesterday's daf and today's daf. We go back to the Mishnah, and we're going to go over the other examples of the Mishnah, but really the truth of the matter is now that these other examples are going to follow suit. Example number two of the Mishnah, Mile Maim Lashkos Behemto. Let's say the non-Jew goes to the well in order to draw water. The well is the Rishus HaYachid. He's transferring the water from the Rishus HaYachid in the well into the outside of the well, the Rishus HaRabim. So again, he's a guy. He could do that. And he did it for his own animals. Mashka Acharav Yisrael, the Imbishvi Yisrael Aser. Now, if he didn't know that you were there and all the water was for himself, so then what you can do is that you can go ahead and help yourself to that water. However, if he knows that you're there and he's doing it for you, so then it's going to be Aser. That's a positive benefit. Third example. Also nachri kevish liari bo leire bo yored acharav yisrael the imbishvil yisrael also. Let's say they're on a boat, right? Many times they're on a masechta, right? We find that they're on a boat on Shabbos, and they want to now they want to get off the boat, and so a ramp is constructed. So if the guy is constructing the ramp for himself, so then the Jew afterwards can go ahead and use that ramp. If, however, the guy was building the ramp for a Jew, so then the Jew cannot benefit from the ramp, and the Jew cannot get off the boat on Shabbos if the ramp was made for the Jew. And the Gemara says, Maisa Shahaya, Rabbi Gamliel was on a boat together with the Zakenim, they were getting off the boat on Shabbos. And a non-Jew built the ramp, and they used the ramp on Shabbos. The Gemara later is going to clarify. You mean to tell me that they didn't know that Rabbi Gamliel was on the boat? So stay tuned, because we're going to be discussing that in the Gemara. Utsricha. Now, these three examples in the Mishnah, all of them are wonderful examples, but what is the necessity of all these examples? And the Gemara goes on to explain. Diyash min aner, mishum dener lecha ner lemea. Because when it comes to ner, we have this idea that a lamp is good for 100. Meaning that once you're lighting a light, what difference does it make whether you light one or whether you light two? One is sufficient even for 100 people. Now, obviously, with two lights, you have more illumination, but the point is that one lamp is sufficient for himself as it would be for others as well. And so there is no qualitative difference in terms of lighting, whether he's doing so for himself or he's doing for others. So, avamayim ligzor dilma asir la'afusha bishri yisrael. But when it comes to the drawing of the water, let's say he is drawing the water for himself, but he sees that you're behind. So under those circumstances, one should be concerned, or one, let's say it better. One could be concerned that he sees that you're there and he's going to draw more specifically for you. That would have been a reasonable argument, but the Gemara says, but that's the point of the Mishnah, is that we don't accept that argument. If at the time when the goy drew the water, he was drawing it for himself, so we can assume now that he was just drawing it for himself, and he's not going to draw any more water specifically for the Jew. And finally, bekevish lamali, and as far as the ramp is concerned, ma'isa derabim gamlo zekedim kamash malan. The third example is because the Mishnah knows that it has a story to tell. The story with Rabbi Gamliel is a ma'isa shahaya, and so before telling the story, the Mishnah just simply wanted to set it up by telling us the halacha as it relates to a ramp. So three examples in the Mishnah: a guy lighting a fire, a guy drawing water out of a well, a guy building a ramp so that people can disembark from the boat. So these three examples are all working with the same basic premise. If the non-Jew is doing it for himself, so then the Jew can subsequently get benefit from it. If the non-Jew is doing it for a Jew, so then the Jew cannot get benefit from it, as we are now in the world of Amir Lanachri. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara here quotes the following brayso: Anachru Shalikei Asavim. Machil acharav Yisrael. If let's say you had a non-Jew who plucked out grass on Shabbos, so the Jew can come subsequently and take some of that grass. The imbishvil Yisrael aser. However, if he's doing it for the Jews, then it would be aser. Again, another example of Amir Lanachri. Mile mayim lahashkoso behemto mashka acharav Yisrael. The imbishvil Yisrael aser. And if the non-Jew is drawing water for his own animals, and there's some water left over, so then the Jew can go ahead and take. If, however, he's doing it for the Jew, then it would be aser. Okay, very similar to our Mishnah. The reason why we're quoting the Braisa over here is because of the next lines. This is only true if he does not recognize the Jew, but if he recognizes the Jew, it's going to be aser. And at this point, what we think the pshat is the following. Is that if he sees that there is a Jew behind him, in terms of the plucking of the grass, in terms of the pulling of the water, the drawing in of the water, so if he sees there's a Jew behind him and he knows it's a Jew, so at this point in time, what we think the pshat in the braisa is that he's doing it on behalf of himself and he's doing it on behalf of the Jew as well, and therefore it's going to be aser. And the Gemara now wants to clarify this very point. In the Gemara says, is this true? V'hamar. Rav Huna Amar Rabbi Chanina Mamid Adam Mehemto Al Gabi Asavim B'Shabbos Havalo Al Gabi Muksa B'Shabbos. So we have a statement by Rabbi Chanina, and that is that you can allow your animal to graze on Shabbos if the grass is still connected to the ground. But if, let's say, the grass was picked off on Shabbos, so that grass picked off on Shabbos is Muksa, and therefore it's going to be Aser. Now let's, a couple of points to clarify before we go and learn this in the context of our Gemara. And that is, let's go over the first point, and that is that you can allow your animal to graze on Shabbos. Now that seems to be a pretty obvious point, meaning your animals obviously want to eat on Shabbos. It's a, it's what's the chiddush over here? So a really interesting Tosfos, second to last Tosfos on the Amud, and I mentioned this Tosfos when we did, when we went all the way back in Masechta Shabbos, and we did the fifth parak of the Masechta, b'meh mehema yotza v'meh ino yotza, when we know there's a mitzvah shvisas behemto, which means that your animal cannot do malach on Shabbos, your animal cannot carry on Shabbos. So Tosfos over here deals with a simple question, such a simple question. And that is that, well, if your animal is grazing on Shabbos, isn't your animal violating Shabbos? Meaning by virtue of the fact now that your animal is picking grass out of the ground, so your animal is involved in the malach of Tolesh, and isn't that a malach, and shouldn't you stop your animal from doing so? So Tosfos quotes a mechilta. I might have thought that you should not let your animal graze for exactly this reason, because there's a mitzvah shisas behemta. The Gemara says no, because when it comes to the animal, the key ingredient for the animal is yanuach. The animal's going to rest. If you're going to have to stop your animal from grazing, so that all you're doing is just creating pain to the animal, and part and parcel of shvisas behemta is to let your animal rest. So that means that your animal should not be carrying any kind of burden, and it also means, says the Mechilta, that you have to let your animal graze. Okay, so point number one of the braces is let your animal graze, and we learned that chiddush is, despite the fact that your animal is being tolish, but that's fine. Now the second point of Rabbi Chanina, which is what we're focusing on over here, is that if there is muksa, so then what you cannot do is that you cannot allow the animal to go ahead and eat the muksa on Shabbos. And that means to say muksa means that it was plucked out on the from the ground on Shabbos itself. Now, we just learned in the Braisa that if the non-Jew plucked it out of the ground, so then it should be fine. So what's the difference between the Braisa and that which we taught for Rabbi Chanina? It seems to be a stira. So the Gemara says, Dekayim le ba'apa v'azlehi va'achla. So the Gemara says, no. What it means to say is as follows. What you can't do is you can't pick up the grass and give it to your animal, because the grass is muksa, meaning the grass was plucked on Shabbos, and so you can't pick it up. That's what Rabbi Chanina is saying. What the Braisa is saying is that if the non-Jew went ahead and ripped the grass out of the ground, and now your animal is going to go there, if your animal wants to go on its own and consume it, that's fine. That's kayim le ba'apa. All you're doing is standing in front of your animal, basically directing your animal in that direction, but you yourself are not actually picking up the grass. Your animal's doing that on its own. That would be fine. The distinction between Rabbi Chanina and the Braisa. Amar amar b'medvar mamorm she'in makira v'amakira aser. Now we go back to the last part of the Braisa, and now we're going to try to spend some time understanding that if the non-Jew knows that there is a Jew, like in the example of the drawing of the water, he knows that there's a Jew behind him, so then under those circumstances, it's going to be also the Gemara says, I don't understand. Let's go back to our Mishnah, because our Mishnah seems to be a perfect example of recognition. Haram Gamliel makira hava, meaning there were a bunch of people on the boat, including Rabbi Gamliel. They're ready to disembark the boat. They don't have a ramp. They're building a ramp. You would think that the person building the ramp knows full well that Rabbi Gamliel is on the boat, and isn't he also building the ramp for Rabbi Gamliel? And it shouldn't it be usher? And yet the Mishnah's entire point is to tell us that Rabbi Gamliel himself used the ramp. So the Gemara's response is twofold. One, Amar Abai Shalom Befanav Hava. So Abai gives them a kimta. Abai suggests, oh, well, maybe the case of the Mishnah is where the Jews, when building the ramp, didn't know that Rabbi Gamliel was on the ramp, was on the boat. And so therefore, it's only under those circumstances where Rabbi Gamliel made usage of the ramp, because they didn't know that Rabbi Gamliel was there. So Abai's answer is an ukimta, a circumstance that is put into the Mishnah, so now the Mishnah and the Braisa are in full agreement. Rav Amar Rav says, no, you don't have to say that. Afilu tema befanav. No, you could say that when the non-Jews built the ramp in order so that the non-Jews would be able to disembark from the boat, they knew that Rabbi Gamliel was on the boat. And it's not going to offend the Braisa. It doesn't go against the Braisa. Afilu tema befanav. Ner le'echad, ner le'meya. Because you have to take the following into consideration. When they're building a ramp, they're building one ramp. It doesn't matter whether one person is disembarking or 100 people are disembarking. That's one ramp that they're building. And so even though they know Rebbe Gamliel is on the boat, but they would have built the same ramp even if it was just one person. Even if it was just only the non-Jew disembarking from the boat, they would have built the same ramp. So that's ner le'echa, ner le'mea. A lamp for one, a lamp for 100. Under those circumstances, even though they know that Rebbe Gamliel is on the boat, it's going to be motor. The case where the makiro is going to be an issue is if we're dealing with something where the quantity are going to change because he knows there are non-Jews. If the quantity changes because there are going to be non-Jews, so under those circumstances, when he knows and he's makir and he recognizes that there is a non-Jew out there also who stands to benefit, so under those circumstances, it's going to be aser. Meisve the Gemara challenges Amalem Rami Gamliel Hol v'Shalom b'Faneinu also Neirid Bo. Now here in the Braisa, telling over the same story but with dialogue, and that is Rami Gamliel now is explaining why it is that they can use the ramp, since the ramp was created Shalom b'Faneinu. Without our knowledge, meaning they didn't know that we were here, so therefore we're going to use it. Now, the way we just read the Braisa is perfect for Abaye. The difficulty is going to be with Rava. So the Gemara now is going to defend Rava's position, Emahova Asu, Nered Bo. So since they made it, let's go down on it. Meaning it is a somewhat more difficult reading of the Braisa, but basically what the Gemara is suggesting is that what Rami Gamliel is saying is that, look, they are making the ram primarily for themselves. Shlo b'faninu just simply says that they're not doing it for us, they're doing it for themselves, and therefore we can make usage of it. They knew we were here, okay, but ner le'echa, ner le'meya. It's the same ramp, and so therefore we can go ahead and we can use it. Tashma, the Gemara says, well, let's consider now the following, a Mishnah that obviously is going to be connected to our discussion. Yirshu Yisrael v'nachrim darim b'socha. Let's say you have a city where there are Jews and non-Jews living in the city. V'aisaba merchas. Hamarchetzes b'Shabbos, and let's say there's a bathhouse where it was heated up on Shabbos. Im Rav Nachriim moter lerchotz ba miyad. Im Rav Yisrael yamtim b'chtei shi'chamu chamin. And now going to the bathhouse immediately after Shabbos. So here the Mishnah tells us it depends on the population of the community, the demographics. If the majority of the people living in that community are non-Jews, and so that means that when the bath attendant heats up the water on Shabbos. Now, the bath attendant is not Jewish. But when he heats up the water, who is he doing it for? He's doing it for the majority of the community. If the majority of the community is not Jewish, so then it can be said, it is said, that the beneficiary of that are non-Jews. Therefore, the Jew can go in there immediately after Shabbos and does not have to wait. It is not considered as if he's getting benefit from the malacha that's done on Shabbos because it was done for the majority being non-Jews. However, says the Braisa, it's a Mishnah. However, if the majority of the population are Jewish, and then it was heated up for that majority, so then that means that it was a malacha that was done for a Jew, and you cannot get benefit from that. Now here, what that means, you cannot get benefit from that, is that it means you're going to have to wait until after Shabbos, and not just after Shabbos, but the amount of time it takes for the water to heat up, and thereby you're not receiving any benefit for anything that was done on Shabbos per se. And you have to wait, bichtei shiyase, the amount of time that it takes in order for it to be made. Right? In terms of just taking this Gemara and translating it into practical halacha, so let's say, the example that is touted all the time, is that you want to go to, let's say, for example, Dunkin' Donuts immediately after Shabbos. So when they were making the donuts on Shabbos, again, Dunkin' Donuts owned by a non-Jew, that is under Hashgacha. And the food is kosher, but it was baked on Shabbos itself. So do you have to wait after Shabbos? So basically, it's exactly this discussion. If the majority of its customer base is Jewish, so then obviously you have to wait Bichtei Shiyase. If the majority of the customer base is not Jewish, then you don't have to wait Bichtei Shiyase. And I wish it were that simple. In other words, you have to figure out what the majority is. The majority of the customer base, the majority of the population. Okay. But that is where the Gemara would come into play. So the Gemara at this point in time wonders, well, what difference does it make what the majority is? In other words, if there are Jews living in the community, shouldn't they have to wait? And the Gemara's explanation is basically what we said. Hasam ki mechamameh adaita deruba mechamameh. When they're lighting it on behalf of the majority, and that's why the majority is going to determine whether or not the non-Jew, the bath attendant, lit it for Jews, or for non-Jews, he lit it for the majority. Tashma, the Gemara says, well, let's consider now Nerer. He had Dalak b'Mesiba. If, let's say, there was some sort of festivity that was taking place on Shabbos, and the non-Jews lit fires, and Imrov Nachrim Motali Shamash Lara Imrov Yisrael Asr, Mechza Mechza Asr. If the majority of that community are not Jewish, so then they're letting it for the majority. If the majority of that community is Jewish, so then they're letting it for the Jews, and so then it's going to be Asr. And Mechza Mechza, now if it's 50-50, the population is 50-50, then it's going to be Asr. Hasar Nami, Ki Madlaka, Adaita Deruba Madlaka, the Gemara says the same thing. That when they're lighting, so they're lighting it Adaita Deruba, they're lighting it for the majority, and that's why the majority is going to be the determinant. Just coming back to the Mechza Mechza, what if it's 50-50, so they're Machmir. It's an interesting area to be Machmir in. We're really looking at what is probably an Issa Derabanan, not an Issa Deraisa. The Malacha itself obviously is an Issa Deraisa, but it's being done by a non-Jew. And the issue is getting benefit from Malacha that's done by a non-Jew, presumably that would be an Issa Derabanan, presumably. And so by Mechza Mechza, it's certainly interesting that the Braisa's position is that we're going to be Machmir. Rashi writes over here, on the top of the Amud Beis, Umechza Mechza Nami Leka Lameka Malach. De Milsa. It's just simply a lack of knowledge, says Rashi. Because it's 50-50, so there are two legitimate ways to say why it is that the fire was lit. It was either lit for the Jewish population or the non-Jewish population. We simply don't know. As opposed to in our Mishnah, where if you know that that principally, primarily, he's lighting it for himself, and then you came along, well, that's fine. Because he lit it for himself, adaita denafshei, and ner le'echa, ner le'meya. And the fact that you're coming along would be no problem whatsoever. It would not be a violation. One more episode that we're going to be discussing and finishing off now, the 16th parak. Shmuel ikla lebe Avin Turin. Shmuel goes to the house of Rabbi Avin. Asa unachri adle traga adrin shmuel la'ape. Now there was a non-Jew and he lit a fire, and Shmuel turned around. Shmuel did not want to get benefit from that fire that was lit. Came to Chazad Aisi Shtavika Kari. However, for a further review of the incident, he saw that what the non-Jew was doing is that he took a document and he was reading it by the fire that he lit. Amar Adaita Darashehu Da'adlik. Ah, so Shmuel now understood. He didn't light it for the Jew, he lit it for himself. Adrinu Iu La'ape Gabishraga. So then he turned around back to the fire and he benefited from the fire. So again, it was now clear that the non-Jew did it for himself. Again, we're talking about a fire, ner le'echa, ner le'meya. There's not going to be any greater quantity of fire that's lit because that there are other people there. And so this is a perfect example where he did it for himself. And therefore, a Jew can go ahead and benefit from it because that is exactly the case of our Mishnah. That would be a case in which the benefit from the actions of an achri would be mutter. Hadron lach kol kisra, that is the end of the 16th perek, and now we begin the 17th perek of our masechta. And here we tackle muksa. The issues of muksa are going to be a little bit intricate, and we in this perek is going to be in its totality a discussion of the issues of muksa. So let's start with our mishnah kol hakelim nitalim b'shabbos v'dal tosein imahem. When it comes to kelim, kelim can be taken on Shabbos together with their doors. When we say kelim over here, we're talking about basically large chests. Rashi writes over here, Shida, Teval, Migdal. These are large chests that they have a door. Door, you know, opening from the side or opening from the top, either way. So the kli itself, obviously something that you can move on Shabbos. And the doors as well. And afa pishin is parku. And even though the doors were taken off. Now we have in the parentheses the words b'Shabbos. We're going to come back to that. When we start the Gemara, she'inam domim l'dalsos habayis l'fi she'inam in amuchan. Now, don't compare this to the doorways of a house. The door of a house falls off of the house, so then the doorway is going to be muksa. But that's not true when it comes to the doorway of a kli. The door of a kli is part and parcel of the kli, and whether attached or detached, it's still going to have the same status. The kli is not muksa. The kli is what's called muchan, something that you're allowed to move on Shabbos, and so is the door as well. And now, we're going to be giving a host of examples here in the Mishnah of things that you can move on Shabbos And what? How do we view them in terms of a muksa consideration? So we're going to wait till tomorrow, because tomorrow the Gemara is going to explain all the muksa ramifications. We're just going to simply run through the examples of the Mishnah, and we're going to gain a much better understanding in tomorrow's daf. Note to Adam Kornos Lefaseya Boasa Gozen. A person can take a hammer in order to break nuts, the shells of the nuts on Shabbos. Kordes lachtoch bosa devela. One can take an axe in order to cut up the fig cake. They had pressed figs, and they made it into a cake devela, and you can take an axe in order to cut it. Magera lagor bosa gvina. You can take a saw in order to cut the cheese. Magrefa lagrof bosa grofos. You can take a rake and in order to separate the grogorus, the dates that are stuck together. As a reches, the es hamalgez or mazleg, lasis alav lekatan. You could use some sort of, it translates like a shovel, but basically it's something where you can use it to feed the child. As a kushra, as a karkar, these are instruments that are used for weaving. Latchovbo, you want to use it like a toothpick, you may do so. Machashayad litovbo as a coats. You could take a needle in order to remove a splinter. And vishel sakain litovbo as a delas. Or let's say you take a really large needle and use it as a makeshift key. Somebody locked themselves out, and you could use this large needle as a makeshift key. So we are given over here 8 different examples of things that typically are you're not allowed to use on Shabbos, but you are allowed to use on Shabbos. And again, when we start with tomorrow's daf, which we're going to be starting on the bottom of the amud at the 2 dots, so then we're going to go through exactly what category these things fall into, and why, in fact, they'd be allowed to be used on Shabbos for the purposes in which we did. So let's reserve the discussion till tomorrow, where we're going to gain a much better understanding. In the meantime, however, we start with the Gemara. Kol hakelim nitalim v'afilu shenisparku b'Shabbos v'lo mibay b'chol. So, in terms of just a simple analysis of our Mishnah, when the Mishnah says that all the kelim can be taken on Shabbos, even though they were detached on Shabbos, and it goes without saying, even if they were detached during the week. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. If we're going to make an argument, the argument goes in the other direction. Adraba. B'Shabbos mechanim al gabi avihim. Wait 1 second. You go into Shabbos with a chest, and the chest has got a door on it, and the door can come off and can come on. But if you start off on Shabbos with the doorway being on the chest, so now the chest is not muksa, and certainly the door is not muksa as well. We could easily see the door as being part and parcel of the chest. However, b'chol in muchanim al gabi avihim. However, if detachment occurred before Shabbos, so then here the argument is not going to be as strong. The argument could be that the chest obviously is not muksa, but the door that was already detached before Shabbos, maybe that's something different and separate. And under those circumstances, we would say then that the door is not considered part and parcel. And so the Gemara says, if anything, the larger chiddush would be if the door was detached before Shabbos. So Abai says, fine. So then, in terms of a better understanding of the Mishnah, this is the proper way to understand the Mishnah. That when it comes to any of these kelim, these chests that we're describing over here, even though the doors were detached before Shabbos, still the chest is not muksa, and the doors themselves also are not muksa, because it's understood that the doors are simply part and parcel. And even though it was detached before Shabbos, still the door does not have a muksa status, because it's still viewed as a key component to the actual chest itself. In our Gemara, we just saw the idea that when I have a door detached from a chest, so the door does not gain any kind of independent identity. It's still viewed as part and parcel of the chest, and it's not going to gain a muksa status. And this, says Tosos, third Tosos on the Amud, is in contradistinction to Shivrei Kalim. Shivrei Kalim, which we discussed a number of times through our Masechta, and we will be discussing it also upcoming as well, that Shivrei Kalim are considered muksa. But Tosos says, but note that there's a very basic distinction. See Tosos inside. Tosos writes, third Tosos, Afa gab de lakame bepirka namar ipcha gabi shivrei keli, kli cheres, de shari latalto yoser, kishinishbru be'er Shabbos, mishinishbru b'Shabbos. So by Shivrei Kelim, the Svar goes in the exact opposite, which is that if it breaks on Shabbos, so you have now a new entity, and it's muksa. And if it breaks before Shabbos, as long as you found the utility for the broken pieces before Shabbos, so then it's not going to be muksa, and that's the exact opposite of what we're saying over here. But Tosus notes this because it's not comparable. Lo dami dahacha akati kli hu shadayin omed lamalach rishona v'rayi lehischa berakis ve'im akli. Because consider over here that when we're talking about the doors of the chest, so the utility of that door has not changed. It is still the same exact utility. It's a door for the chest. It was so when it was attached, and it's, just, and it's so even when it's detached, because we're going to simply just reattach it. Avalakama lo chashiv kli ela machma she'omed lamalach acheres. Hilkach kishanich bar b'shabes aser tvei da'avi nolai. Ah, but when we're talking about a kli that breaks, so now we're talking about repurposing. Ah, so when we're repurposing a kli, only if I gave a designation, a repurposing before Shabbos, then we could say it is not muksa going into Shabbos. But if it breaks on Shabbos, one cannot repurpose it on Shabbos. It's very different, says Tosfos, than our discussion over here. Tanu Rabbanan, we're back to the Gemara, starting with a brayso del shel shita v'shateva v'shel migdal, no din of a lo machzirin. So the doors of the chest you can take off, but you can't return them. Now, when it comes to a door of a chicken coop, the chicken coop is grounded, it's connected to the ground. You can't take the doors off, you can't put it back on again. And the Gemara says, half of the Braisa I understand really well, but the other half, notably the first half, is difficult to understand. And the Gemara goes through this. So I understand the chicken coop and the door on the chicken coop. The chicken coop is Mechubala Karka. And so therefore, it's considered part and parcel of the ground. And so therefore, removing the door is a violation of the malach of stira, and replacing the door would be a violation of the malach of binyan, that I understand. Elo shel shita v'shel teva v'shel migdal, my kasavar. But when we're talking about these chests, which are movable items, so then I don't understand. Because over here, we should either be, it should either be all mutter, or it should be all aser. Look, if you subscribe to the idea that the malach of binyan and stira apply even to kelim as well, so then the doors cannot be put on, nor can the doors be taken off. And if you don't subscribe to the idea of binyan and stira applying to kelim, it only applies to those things that are connected to the ground, so then the removal of the door should be mutter, but the replacement of the door should also be mutter. So where are we in this braisa where we're somewhere in the middle? So Amar Abai Lalom Kasavi Yesh Binyan Bekelim Yesh Stira Bekelim. So Abai says that the Braisa subscribes to the idea that there is Binyan Bekelim, there is Stira Bekelim, that the malachas of Binyan and Stira apply even to Kelim. Vishinitlo Ka'amar. And what the Braisa means is that they were taken off already. Either somebody else took them off, in other words, the non-Jew took them off, but not you. So Amar Le Rava, so Rava says that is a really difficult shot in the Braisa. Look back at the Braisa, read the Braisa, Sheitshuvas Bedavar Echada, note Lin Kitani. So the first question, says Rava, is that when you read the Braisa, you see the conjugation of the verb is that you take the door off the kli. So it's pretty clear that we're talking about an active removal of the door. That's one. Already we could stop there, but, and then furthermore, V'od my aval lo machzirin. And then look at the Braisa where the Braisa is making a clear contrast. Right, you could take it off, but you can't put it back on. The word aval is telling us a clear contrast. And if you're telling me nitalin, that somebody else took it off, so then what's the contrast? So ela amar Rava kasavar ein binyan mekelim ein stira mekelim. So Rava says that really the Braisa subscribes to the idea that the malachas of binyan and the malach of stira do not apply to kelim. That is the starting point, the premise of the Braisa. And if that's true, I certainly understand why the Braisa allows me now to take the doorway off, because that's not a violation of stira. Why does the Braisa say you can't put it back on again? Gzera shema yitaka. Because if you put the door on, you may put it on with not only a lot of strength, but you may put it on permanently. Rashi says you may nail it in. And under those circumstances, one is going to be violating. Now, violating what? So don't say you're violating binyan, because, again, the entire premise of the Braisa is ein binyan bekelim. So what one is violating, look at Rashi. Rashi, fourth line down. Third line down as they get wide, end of the line. Gzera shem yitaka, b'chazaka, b'sakin, v'yaseidos. You're going to use a knife, you're going to use pegs. B'havale gemar malacha. You are now completing the kli. V'chay mishum makeh bepatish. And so this will be a violation of makeh bepatish, meaning that you're not just constructing, well, there's no malacha of binyan because we're talking about a kli, but you are finishing, you're concluding. And once you finish an item, even a kli, so then one is in violation of Makim B'Patish. That's the way Rashi understands our Gemara over here. And that would be the concern of the price in terms of putting the door back on Shabbos. In terms of the Malacha Binyan, that's not a problem. In terms of permanently securing it there, or at least the concern that you're permanently going to... you're permanently going to place it over there. So that is now going to be a malacha of Makim B'Patish. So explains Rashi in terms of a Gemara. There are, Tosos doesn't necessarily agree with that explanation, but that is Rashi's explanation. And with that, we're going to pause and let us go through a quick summary of today's daf. We just wrapped up from yesterday's daf. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana had three statements to make. Truth is that it was not relevant to yesterday's daf, but as long as the Gemara quoted him once regarding the killing of dangerous snakes and scorpions, so then three other halachas that were said, two of them having to do with muksa, a menorah, a small menorah, and a small wagon is not going to be muksa. And the last issue is that in the house of Beis Rebbe, they drank the wine, even though it only had one seal on it, unclear what that heter is based on. Either you subscribe to the Shita Rebbe Eliezer, or Beis Rebbe had an Eima Yisera, there was extra fear by the house of Rebbe. And then we started our big topic for today, and that was Amir Lanachri, and Hana'a, benefit from Malacha that was done by a non-Jew on Shabbos. And here the Mishnah gave three different examples in which one is allowed to get benefit under the circumstances where the Nachri did it for himself. If, however, the Nachri did it for you, even if you didn't ask, I do not want to understate that enough, even if you didn't ask him to do so, but he clearly did it for you, so under those circumstances, it would be usher to get benefit not only for you, but Tosha says, for all Jews. The difference between yesterday's daf and today's daf, Tosha was very clear about it. It is fundamental to the daf itself today to understand that in yesterday's daf, you were benefiting from the Jew putting out the fire. In today's daf, you cannot benefit when the Jew is lighting the fire for you. What's the difference? So Tosu says the difference is whether you're not you're getting direct physical benefit, like an ardaf, versus just simply the absence of something which is bothering you. The fire that is lit, or the example that we gave this morning, or let's say simply the guy turns off the light. So that would be mutter, you can get benefit from that. That which is usur is when you're directly benefiting from that which the guy did. That is today's daf. The big discussion comes today where there's an ambiguity in terms of who he did it for. Did he do it for himself and did he do it for you? And so that was a big discussion within today's daf. The example that was given the Mishnah is that a group of people on a boat wanted to disembark from the boat. There were Jews on the boat as well. They built a ramp on Shabbos. And Rabbi Gamliel himself went ahead and used that ramp that was built. Now, was it built on behalf of Rabbi Gamliel? And so, Abaye and Rava are debating that issue. Abaye says, Shlo b'fanav hava. Abaye says that it was that when the non-Jew built the ramp, he simply did not know Rabbi Gamliel was on the boat. Rava, on the other hand, says, no, you don't have to say that. In other words, he knew that Rabbi Gamliel was on the boat. However, the argument of ner le'echa, ner le'meya, that it would have been the same ramp that the non-Jew would have built for himself, which he needed to build for himself, so that he would disembark from the boat, and so therefore no extra ramp needed for Rabbi Gamliel, and so therefore we have the argument of ner le'echad, ner le'meya. The Gemara goes over other examples of this ambiguity, where let's say the bath attendant lights the water on Shabbos to heat up the bath on Shabbos. Can you go there immediately after Shabbos? So again, if the majority of the population of the town is Jewish, the answer is no. You have to wait, b'chdei shi'asa. If the majority of the town is non-Jewish, so then the answer would be yes. We saw a similar braisa on the bottom of Kuchav Beis Amud Aleph regarding the lighting of a light that was done by non-Jews on Shabbos, and it lit up the community, and once again, can you get benefit from that? If the majority, same conclusion. Majority of the population is Jewish, the answer is no. And if the majority is not Jewish, the answer would be yes. Mechsa, mechsa, interesting. The conclusion of the Gemara is mechsa, mechsa, you have to be machmir. And it's interesting because it's seemingly an issa derabanan, and we're being machmir on what is basically a suffix. That's the way we presented it. That's certainly the way Rashi seems to present it. I kind of took us to the end of the 16th parak. We started the 17th parak, we started muksa. The first point of the Mishnah was that the kelim can be moved on Shabbos, the doors can be moved on Shabbos as well. The second part of the Mishnah is that items that are generally used for Isser on Shabbos, but if you're using them for Heter purposes, you're allowed to use them on Shabbos. The Mishnah gave no less than 8 different examples of tools and instruments that one can use on Shabbos if basically you're using it for Heter purposes. The understanding of that will be coming in tomorrow's daf. So let's wait till tomorrow to have a better understanding of these 8 examples. The Gemara's discussion is the doors of the chest, which we said are not muksa. They're not muksa whether they detach on Shabbos, they're not muksa whether they detach before Shabbos. And we noted the difference. We saw the Tosos this morning, the distinction made between this example and the example of Shivrei Kelim, and the distinction between the 2 cases. And finally, the doors of the Shita Teva of Migdal, you can take them off, but the Braisa says you cannot put them back on again. Why not? So the Gemara rejects, well, it's a machlok, it's a Trina Bayin Rava, but Rava's opinion is that it's not because that there's an Isser of Binyan and Stira by Kalim. In fact, the Braisa subscribes to the idea that Ein Binyan, but Ein Stira by Kalim, that the Malachas of Binyan and Stira are only by those things that are connected to the ground, not to Kalim. And in terms of a good understanding of the Braisa, why can you not return the doors to the chest on Shabbos? Because out of a concern that you're going to put it there and you're going to nail it in, put it in permanently, finishing the Kli, and you'll be in violation of Makabapatish, so explains Rashi.